This is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman. United States reporting more progress in its efforts to eradicate the Islamic State's branch in Afghanistan, confirming the death of its spokesman in a U.S. airstrike. No civilian casualties were reported as a result of the strike, which was first made public by Afghan officials. U.S. government partial shutdown continues, and President Trump and a top Democrat are sparring over it all. We get more now from AP's Sagar Magani.
The president's pushing Democrats to give in to his demands for money to build a border wall he says the nation desperately needs. He says they should know the shutdown is affecting their supporters, tweeting, "Do the Dems realize that most of the people not getting paid are Democrats?" That drew a sharp response from Democratic Senator Mark Warner, the Intelligence Committee's vice chairman, who says the comments are outrageous. Warner tweets, "Federal employees don't go to work wearing red or blue jerseys. They're public servants." He adds, "The president's treating them like poker chips at one of his failed casinos." Sagar Magani, Washington.
Lawyers for Boston Marathon bomber Joker Tsarnaev are asking a federal appeals court to overturn his conviction and death sentence imposed for his role in the 2013 attack. They argue Tsarnaev did not receive a fair trial because the presiding judge refused to move the case away from Boston. Tsarnaev's older brother, Tamarin, who took part in the attack, died after a gunfight with police 4 days following the bombing. The G5 Sahel Force, a joint force of five Sahel region countries tasked with fighting militants, including Boko Haram and Al-Qaeda, is struggling with funding and lacks coordination among member states. Some officials and analysts warn that it could undermine the counterterrorism mission. This is VOA News. Saudi Arabia's King Salman has made changes to his cabinet after international outrage over the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi nearly 3 months ago. That story now from AP's Ed Donahue.
The moves follow the killing of writer Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate in Turkey. It includes the naming of a new foreign minister and a shakeup of the country's Supreme Council, which oversees security. The council is headed by the king's son, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who is also deputy prime minister and defense minister. It's a sign the crown prince is getting a tighter grip on power. But he is having trouble convincing many in the U.S. and other Western countries he had nothing to do with Khashoggi's killing. The writer was critical of the crown prince in columns for The Washington Post before he was killed. I'm Ed Donahue.
United Arab Emirates reopened its embassy in Damascus, a sign that Syrian President Bashar al-Assad returning to the Arab fold. Reuters' Lucy Fielder reporting that the UAE once funded rebels opposed to Assad, who has reestablished an iron grip on Israel.
The UAE, a U.S. ally, was once among Arab countries that funded rebels fighting against Assad. Its embassy closed in the early months of the war that erupted in 2011. One reason for the change of heart, the UAE said, was to, quote, curb regional interference, an apparent reference to its arch-rival Iran. But it's also recognition that Assad has recovered the bulk of Syria over the past couple of years, with critical military support from Russia, Iran, and Shiite armed groups such as Lebanon's Hezbollah. And he received another possible boost last week when Donald Trump decided to pull U.S. forces out of northern and eastern Syria, where they support Kurdish-led militia.
That is Reuters' Lucy Fielder. Hundreds of residents of a tower block in Sydney, Australia, began leaving their homes for a second time in 5 days today after cracks were initially discovered in the building on Christmas Eve. The builder of the tower residence said at a heated meeting they would have to vacate their homes for up to 10 days so that a prompt investigation of the building could take place. The residents were confused in this particular one about what she was hearing.
The people that are actually the big players who are organizing everything don't seem to be telling any of us what's going on.
Residents began hearing cracking sounds on Monday, forcing emergency services to evacuate the tower, with neighboring areas anticipating the collapse of the building. It was later confirmed a precast concrete panel had collapsed in the tower block, which was only completed earlier this year. Get more news at voanews.com. I'm Steve Norman, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Friday, December the 28th. Thank you for joining us this morning, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you. Trade unions in Sudan have called for more anti-government protests as the head of the country's parliament agreed to question the interior minister about the use of force against demonstrators. And the East African regional integration is in jeopardy as tension raised between the two member countries of Rwanda and Burundi.
The extraordinary summit can help to find solution to resolve the issue between the Republic of Burundi and the Republic of Rwanda. It will be a good opportunity for head of state to understand the real issue.
Isabelle Ndahayo is Burundi's minister in charge of the East African Community Affairs. And in the DRC, the main opposition Union for Democracy and Social Progress Party is calling on the international community to put pressure on outgoing President Joseph Kabila not to interfere in the rescheduled Sunday presidential election.
This is leading us to a non-election at all. This is just an attempt for them to see what will be the reaction. And the reaction was out there. Today in Beni, Butembo, even Goma, people were in the street.
Abraham Lukwa Bwanga is the National Secretary in charge of communication for the main opposition Union for Democracy and Social Progress, UDPS. Stay tuned. Those stories plus sports are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Journalists and trade unions in Sudan have called for more anti-government protests as the head of the country's parliament agreed to question the interior minister about the use of force against demonstrators. Protesters this week called for the resignation of Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, who on Thursday accused large Western states of provoking the economic crisis which now embroils the country. Edward Yerenian reports for VOA from Cairo.
A Sudanese journalist network, along with a number of labor and trade unions, issued calls on Thursday for a day of peaceful protests against the government. They say the protests are aimed at drawing attention to what the groups consider an excessive use of force against people who have taken to the streets to condemn a rise in food and fuel prices. The government says that 8 protesters have been killed during clashes between protesters and security forces, while some opposition groups say more than 24 people have died. Meanwhile, the head of Sudan's parliament has summoned Interior Minister Ahmed Bilal Osman for questions about the casualties. Suleiman Idris, Secretary General of the Islamic Party, a component of the governing coalition in Sudan, told journalists that peaceful protests are protected by the constitution and that spilling blood is unacceptable. He says that he opposes killing and the use of violence and that citizens anywhere in the country have the right to protest in accordance with the Constitution and all international human rights declarations. Lawmakers recently amended the Constitution to allow him to run for another term in 2020. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
In 3 years since Burundi and Rwanda's relations soured in 2015, that's after Burundi's president Pierre Nkurunziza vied for another term in office, the relationship between the two neighboring countries has continued to deteriorate. It's one of the reasons why the integration of the East African community process is in crisis. For more on this, Moses Havyarimana reports from Burundi's capital, Bujumbura.
Both Burundi and Rwanda joined the East African Community in 2007 in efforts to promote free movement of goods and capital within the member states. However, since 2015, when the two countries' relations soured, citizens were negatively impacted as Rwandans couldn't freely move to Burundi and vice versa. In a letter wrote to the Ugandan president, who is the current chair of the East African Community Heads of State Summit, Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza called for East African Community Extraordinary Summit to address the differences between the two countries. Isabelle Ndahayo is Burundi's minister in charge of East African Community Affairs.
The extraordinary summit can help to find solution to resolve the issue between the Republic of Burundi and the Republic of Rwanda. It will be a good opportunity for head of state to understand the real issue and thereafter advise accordingly. Good neighboringness is a fundamental principle to the achievement of the objective of the community. It has a very big impact on the implementation of the Common Market Protocol and also the Custom Union Protocol.
However, Rwanda denied the allegations made by Burundi of trying to destabilize and oust President Pierre Nkurunziza's government. Olivier Nduhungirehe, Rwanda's Minister of State in charge of East African Community Affairs, says Burundi's willing to attend the next summit justifies that a special summit was no more on the table.
No, this summit will never take place. What will take place is the ordinary summit, because the situation in Burundi is an internal situation, and even the East African community is in charge of mediating. We have a mediation which is led by President Museveni of Uganda, and there is also a facilitation led by President Benjamin Mkapa, former president of Tanzania. So this is an internal situation. It's a distraction from the main issue, which is an internal situation in Burundi.
Kigali had repeatedly denied being involved in Burundi's internal issues, but Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza recently said Rwanda was considered as an enemy of Burundi. George Odong is a member of the East African Legislative Assembly.
The call for peaceful coexistence and a peaceful resolution of conflicts between partner states is not an option. It is a treaty obligation. The people of East Africa should be at the heart of this conversation and call their leaders to sit down and resolve this conflict. The silence of East Africans on this situation that has endured for over 3 years has conspired to sustain the current status quo.
The postponed East African Community Heads of State Summit is expected to take place in February next year. However, the relation between Burundi and Rwanda remains a major task for the East African community to address. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
And thank you, Moses. We want to get some analysis or understanding on what is happening between these two neighboring countries, Rwanda and Burundi. They have a lot in common. They share cultures, ethnic divides, and sometimes economic challenges. And both countries are also members of the East African community and have gone through complicated violent conflicts related to ethnic divisions. But of late, there has been tension between these two neighbors, as reported by Moses Havyarimana in our previous report. Experts say that for these tensions to be public right now means that they have been simmering below the surface. So how did we get here, and what are some of the reasons behind the tension? And to provide context, I reached Edmond Kajire, a regional analyst and reporter for the East African newspaper in Kigali. All right, so Edmond, thank you for joining us here on Daybreak Africa. Bring us up to speed. What are some of the factors pushing this tension?
Well, down here in Kigali, it's the festive season as usual. It's business as usual. But of course, going by what the leaders in the region have been saying or doing, clearly the situation is not very good in the East African community. We've had the head of state summit cancelled twice, I think at the end of November, and the one which was supposed to take place actually today, 27th of December, they were cancelled. This one was postponed. The situation is, of course, quite tense. The comments from the leaders in the region are not very encouraging.
Comments by President Kagame and Rwandan President Paul Kagame and President Nkurunziza of Burundi, the recent public statements. What are some of the things they've said?
We've had President Kagame mention that he will not be provoked into comment. He hasn't commented directly about Burundi from the look of things, but he has made some comments that can be seen as mentioning the neighbors,
right,
mentioning the neighbors which right do not wish Rwanda very well.
Basically, those who need to know will know type of messaging.
He has not directly talked about Burundi. I think recently during the press conference after the National Dialogue Council on Shikirano, he did mention that Rwanda will not be drawn into, will not be provoked into the war of words. But from the look of things, we've had some exchanges between President Museveni and President Nkurunziza have read somewhere that in Burundi there are going to be protests against President Museveni. What they think is
right.
President
Museveni. And that's another whole layer to this situation, aside from the Rwanda-Burundi tension. It is related.
It is complex. It involves a number of countries. To this point, I think some observers say it would take a mediator from outside the East African community to try and quell the tensions.
Mm.
But
if these tensions are on a public level right now, that means they've been simmering for quite a while.
They've been around. I mean, if we talk about the cancellation of the show of Mehdi.
Right, and that's another thing that I was going to ask you about Mehdi's run-on superstar for our listeners who might not know who this person is. Quite a big deal in that region. He had a concert scheduled for sometime this week in Bujumbura. Mehdi is Rwandan, but he has roots in Burundi. And so the concert was cancelled, and I saw a statement on social media saying that it was cancelled for security reasons. And that, for me, that was very key that they mentioned security. What do they mean by that?
From the look of things, I think there were some threats which were published on some social media platforms. I saw a post which was posted on Facebook by someone encouraging Imbonerakure to attack Mehdi.
Imbonerakure is the youth, the militia that Nkurunziza's party.
Yes, they were encouraging them to make sure that that concert does not happen, that boy from Rwanda should not come to take money from Burundians, because clearly Rwandans are enemies of Burundians.
Mm.
So I think a number of those posts are curated around, and I think when he arrived in the country on Christmas, he said the show will proceed, the show will go on in Burundi.
Was this concert billed as some sort of goodwill gesture by, Mehdi or those affiliated with him to kind of mend some of the ties between these two countries?
No, I think from 2015, when the tensions broke out between the two countries, music and arts were not affected. We've seen a few people go to Burundi from here to perform. We've seen Chali Nanina go to Burundi and perform. We've seen
another local band, Chali Nanina.
Comedy Nights went there. But
right.
I think recently Bruce Melody also cancelled the show in Burundi over some security concerns too. So from the look of things, to this point, we can say even the arts and the entertainment industry,
they're into the mix now.
Not affected they're by being, the tensions, so are now being affected by the tensions between the two countries.
Mm. Edmond Kajire is a regional analyst and reporter with the East African newspaper. I reached him in Kigali. Peaceful demonstrations in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, turned chaotic after police used tear gas to disperse the youth who were chanting anti-police slogans. The group of youth were protesting, walking from Kibera into the city center, Nairobi city center, on their way to the police headquarters. They said that they were seeking for justice for a young university student, Carlton Maina, who was recently killed by a police officer on the 22nd of this month. From Nairobi, Maureen Ojambo has more on this.
The peaceful demonstrations turned chaotic immediately. The group of youths and civil societies who took it to the streets demanding for justice for the Leeds University student Carlton Maina turned into a battlefield for hours when the anti-riot police were ordered to disperse them. According to one of the demonstrators, Diana Bwari, the deceased was walking home in a group of three friends in Kibera slums after watching a football match.
I also live in Kibera. There are so many challenges. And Maina getting shot by the police is so bad, and it's very painful. You are supposed to take care of us, not to kill us. Maina had a very bright future. He was going to bring change in Kibera.
The police claim they received a tip-off from residents who claimed a group of four gents was terrorizing members of the public. Maina is said to have been on Christmas holiday and was set to leave for London in January when his dreams were cut short by the police, a move the civil societies claim was an extrajudicial killing. Moses Okinyi from the International Commission of Jurist claims Maina is innocent and that justice should be served.
There's no way that the police can come and claim that this boy was a criminal. We have seen a policeman chase criminals, two criminals recently, an AP policeman. He chased two criminals, arrested them. He never shot them.
The mother to the deceased said that the police killed his innocent son without proper investigations. The youths who were demonstrating claim the police are always targeting the youths in the area.
Writing nothing but justice for Maina. Maina was an aspiring student in the United Kingdom. So we are asking the government so that we can find the justice of her. We people in Kibera, we also have a right to live. The slum dwellers also have a right to live. We want nothing but justice. In Kibera, if you are in Kibera, they say we are thugs. They are not thugs. We are also human beings. We want justice to happen.
As you can hear the crowd saying, there is Rojo, who was also arrested. There were four, as the police indicated.
Recently, during the marking of Human Rights Day, the civil societies ranked police officers in Kenya among forces that lead in extrajudicial killings. However, in a statement, the Independent Police Oversight Authority said that the deceased case is being investigated and that the authority will make appropriate criminal and disciplinary recommendation to the Director of Public Prosecutions. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. In the DRC, the main opposition party, Union for Democracy and Social Progress, UDPS, is calling on the international community to put pressure on President Joseph Kabila not to interfere in the rescheduled Sunday presidential election. The UPDS says there appears to be a plan by the government to prevent the Electoral Commission from organizing the vote, which it argued will ensure President Kabila's continued stay in office. The party's concerns came after the Electoral Commission, CENI, declared polls would not be held in three cities considered to be strongholds of the opposition. For more reaction on this, VOA's Peter Cloti reached Abraham Lukuabwanga, National Secretary in charge of communication for the main opposition Union for Democracy and Social Progress, UDPS.
Coming out with this new trick of not organizing elections in Beni, Butembo and Yuma and being postponed in March, this is leading us to a non-election at all. This is just an attempt for them to see what will be the reaction. And the reaction was out there today in Beni, Butembo, even Goma. People were in the street destroying what they could destroy. And this is actually what they've been looking for, a reason to call a state of emergency with no elections at all. Since Kabila was pushed against the wall to organize the elections, now he's trying his tricks not to have them being organized. But we're calling upon the international community to help us on this, and we hope that the plan that we have is, if there won't be any general election by December the 30th, Kabila should just step out and we should, you know, start what we do, we used to call a transition without Kabila.
Don't you think the issue of conflict in these areas, as well as the Ebola outbreak, enough for caution to be taken for these areas to be excluded? Don't you think that these are potent issues that need to be addressed before elections are held?
My brother, I may tell you, we campaign in Beni, we campaign in several places. You know, even though you do have that Ebola break, people are still living. You know, they go to church, kids go to school, people, they go to work, but people are trying to leave. So why suddenly, while we know that, let's face an example, Beni. People have been killed in Beni since like a decade. Nothing has changed at all. You have those soldiers from the UN. They are there, more than 30,000. You have also the Congolese army being out there. We all know that there is a plot that is put in place not to organize elections. I may tell you know your listener that in Kinshasa, in the DRC, President Kabila doesn't want elections, period. So he will try his best. If he cannot use, you know, the Ebola, it's going to be a war. It's going to be something that he's going to put in place, organize himself in such a way that they may call, you know, like I said, a state of emergency.
So are you saying that UPDS believes that even the rescheduled election December 30 will not proceed as originally rescheduled?
Yes. Let's face this. You have like more than 28 deputy and senators that has been asked to be voted. It's almost like 1.3 million voters that is going to be left behind. They won't have any decision concerning the presidential elections.
Abraham Rwakabwanga is the national secretary in charge of communication for the main opposition Union for Democracy and Social Progress. He was speaking to VOA's Peter Clotty. Time for our Daybreak Sports Report. Let's go to Lagos, Nigeria, where Samson O'Malley is keeping an eye out for what is happening on the continent.
Good Friday morning to you, Jackson. We begin with the draws of the Total CAF Confederations Cup and the Total CAF Champions League, which is scheduled to take place later today in Cairo, Egypt. In the CAF Champions League, 16 teams have qualified for the group stage after the conclusion of the preliminary round last weekend. The teams that will be looking out for their opponents after today's draws include Wydad Athletic Club of Morocco, AS Vita Club, TP Mazembe of Democratic Republic of Congo, Al-Hali Sporting Club of Egypt, Simba Sports Club of Tanzania, Horoya AC of Guinea, Club African of Tunisia, and Orlando Pirates of South Africa. Others include FC Platinum of Zimbabwe, Asec Mimosa of Cote d'Ivoire, Ismaili of Egypt, Club Sportif Constantinos, Joannes Sportif de la Zora of Algeria, Lobi Stars of Nigeria, and Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa. Some football fans I spoke with here in Abuja do not believe there are any surprises in the group stage.
It's going to be a stacked CAF Champions League today with some top teams making it through to the group stage, which will start next year. The draws will be made on the 28th of December 2018.
Experience of Tunisia, TP Mazembe, and Mamelodi Sundowns. I think these are the three teams that you can say that something is really coming up.
The regular one still pulls through. The rhythm is not yet to change. I think the dominance of Northern African teams will continue in the continent of Africa for a while.
And staying with football news, Kalidou Koulibaly has hit back at those who racially abused him in Napoli's 1-0 defeat to Inter Milan, saying he's proud of his skin color. The Senegalese was subjected to monkey chants at the San Siro, with Carlo Ancelotti insisting the event shamed Italian football. Koulibaly was sent off in the match for two bookable offenses, one of which seemingly came for sarcastically applauding the Inter fans for the abuse he received. And elsewhere in England, Mohamed Salah will not face any FA action for the incident which led to Liverpool's penalty and a 4-0 win over Newcastle on Boxing Day. Liverpool were awarded a penalty 2 minutes into the second half after referee Graham Scott judged Salah to have been pulled back by Paul Dummett. Mohamed Salah's reaction to being pulled back did not reach the required threshold for attempting to deceive the referee, and so the Egyptian will not face retrospective action. In athletics news, former World Marathon silver medalist Vincent Kipruto will lead Kenya's charge at the Xiamen International Marathon in China on June the 6th. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a great weekend. And that's it for this Friday, December the 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. Thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good day, Africa.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 TC.